Golden Spiral Media presents The Blacklist Exposed.
We are back to talk about Red's escape plan. And I promise if Aaron doesn't treat me with respect, I'll cut out his filthy tongue with that butter knife. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I am Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson. Sometimes the show makes me feel like I'm watching We Love the 80s. If you really pay attention. I mean, you got Jane Spader. You got Fisher Stevens. This episode is directed by Andrew McCarthy. It's really We Love the 80s.
I love the 80s.
Yeah, well, they do too, apparently. Thanks for joining us this week as we discuss number 80 on The Blacklist, Marvin Gerard, which aired October 8th, 2015, was written by the Brandons and Daniel Knopf, and directed by Andrew McCarthy. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. A quick reminder, if you've not done so already, you can now take our show on the go with the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android. That way, if you're on the run like Liz and Red, you can still get all the intel and analysis you desire. Search for The Blacklist Exposed in the iOS App Store or on Google Play.
We asked you last week to answer our profiling question of the week, which was, what do they, aka the Cabal, want with Dembe?
John said the recipe to Red's famous chicken salad. Martha, some great responses. Martha said, great question, but apparently the Cabal doesn't know who they are messing with. That's right, Martha. He's got a shotgun. Terry said, Dembe is, quote-unquote, their link to Red and Lizzie. After last night, I guess they think they can beat it out of him. Doubtful assumption. Loyalty is, after all, top priority between them. They think Dembe will help them flush Red out. Can't wait to see Red's guns blazing when he catches wind of what they are doing to him. I don't think we have seen Red in the rage we are about to see to save his dear friend. I got to add to that. I'm just letting you know, Troy, if anybody ever takes a sock full of pool balls to me, I'll tell them whatever they want to know about you. I will rat you out like there's no tomorrow.
Because I'm not going to come save your butt either with guns blazing because I worry about myself only.
Exactly. I am just going to, they're going to hit me like, I don't even think they need to hit me. Just put the balls in the sock. And, all right, what do you need to know? What do you need to know? That's how I would. Amanda wrote in, I think Mr. Solomon wants Red, and hurting Dembe is a perfect way to accomplish that. If Liz had got to the airport, the Cabal would have had two important people in their hands right now. However, I think this creepy new character also enjoys torturing Dembe, so maybe this is just Mr. Solomon having a great time. P.S. This podcast is amazing. You have a fan in Spain. Saludos. I should have read that whole email with a Spanish accent, now that I think about it. Darlene, Gail, Diane, Rich, Janice, Sheila, Lisa, Paulette, Joyce, Lori, Debbie, Liz, Angela, George, Cece, Barbara, Becca, Melinda, Robin, all said to get to Red. Whew. You want to finish this out? Because I just got tired on that one.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody for actually responding this week in droves. Kevin said, not only Red, but the places he's been and may go, and possibly the people Red may use. Like, that's kind of interesting. Like, they actually want to get to his network more than they just want to get to Red himself.
That's interesting. I'm still tired, by the way. Continue.
Lori said Red has to have someone going to save Dembe, to which Monica replied and said, Pee-wee, to the rescue.
Today's secret word is...
Dembe.
Now, you all remember what to do whenever anyone says a secret word, right?
Scream!
Right! For the rest of the day, whenever anyone says a secret word, scream real loud!
I threw that in there for you, Aaron, because of all the 80s references.
What just happened? I don't know what just happened. Pee-wee just yelled at me. I don't know what happened. And finally, we have a different approach. Donald says they, quote-unquote, there's a lot of quote-unquotes here, they are going to have Dembe kill Red.
Mm.
Oh, snap, son. I didn't
I like that.
I don't like that. That's awful. Dembe is a great person.
I mean, I just like it as a response, like, you know, I have to kill you in order to save my family kind of thing, which is what Red's basically trying to do.
Son of a biscuit. I don't like that. All right. Tom, though, was kind enough to remind us.
I did not inhale.
Jeez. Lord, you're having way too much fun.
Remember to answer the profiling question of the week. Head on over to theblacklistexposed.com and use our send a voice message button. It's super easy to use right from your computer or smartphone. So once you hear next week's question, you can pause the podcast right now and go ahead and try it out.
With that, next week's profiling question is, what does the line, when I look at you, Azima way home, mean?
Really great question. So with that, let's go ahead and break it down and captain our own ship with this week's case profile.
All right, this episode, Marvin Gerard, is centered around their escape, basically. As Liz is seeking asylum through the Russian embassy, while Red tries to help her on the outside, Red reaches out to a little Russian bureaucrat named Connie, post-copulation, no less, and Red learns the Cabal are going to take Liz out. Now, when we are introduced to Connie, is this a character you like? Because every time we get one of these little Reds and informants or compatriots or someone that can help him along the way, we always have to ask the question, do we want to see this character back? Is this somebody you would want to see again?
I didn't think there's anything great about him personally, except the fact that I have to wonder about the way he looked. When he turned around, I almost thought it was a little throwback to maybe some 007 days, Sean Connery style.
He's got a little Connery in him here.
Yeah, like that head turned, and I was like, oh, kind of got the chills there for a second.
Does that make the girl he's with Moneypenny? That was an awful, awful Sean Connery impression.
It was better than I thought you were going to do.
Wow, it was awful.
So the thing that I liked about every time we meet one of these people, it's like they always want to just pull a gun on at Red or kill Red for some reason. It's like, if these are supposed to be his compadres, then why are they always in a hurry to kill him the first time they see him?
Because he shows up when he just got done, you know, his lady friend is in the shower. That's why. And he's sitting there in a towel half naked. I would pull a gun on him too. Get out of my house, fool. Get out. But we did get a lot of information. I mean, just from the whole episode, it was insane how people were breaking this episode down in terms of information. But we did get, I thought, a very important piece of information, which was Vladimir Vitsin facilitated Keane's assassination as well as got Karakurt into the country. So I guess that brings me the question, do you think this is a future blacklister or do you think this is a future big bad, so to speak?
That could be either way, right? Not Keane's assassination. She didn't die.
No, he facilitated her attempted assassination.
Attempted assassination, yeah.
Yeah, to get her on the plane to kill her. That's an assassination.
Right, because she's not dead.
Yeah, but attempted. I'm sorry, Marvin. I didn't realize we were all lawyers this week. Sorry.
Language is the key, especially with attempted. This episode.
Whoever Vladimir Vitsin is, he wanted Keane dead.
Yes. Cabal wants her dead, and then he's the one that's going to
help. If you correct me
out
one more time, I will kick you to the internet. I will do it.
I'm just doing all the red lines I can in this contract here between us.
Lord. So what do you think this guy is? Who do you think this guy is?
Future blacklister? I don't think that's the case, although Red seemed to know who he was pretty easily, so it could be that way. I think he's just more in the chain of command in the Cabal, just another name in that group, because a lot of the blacklisters that he's had on the list thus far through the two seasons have not been necessarily Cabal members. So since he's technically a Cabal member, I don't think he's a blacklister, but he could be a future villain.
I think he's actually got a little bit more to add. There's too much. They emphasize too much how he's got extensive involvement in previous issues that have happened on the blacklist, you know, previous villains and so forth, previous blacklisters. And the fact that they went to the trouble of making sure we were familiar with his name and that there was a connection, I think he's going to be maybe the Cabal leader in Russia. So basically, at some point, I think we are going to get to Russia. I think it's going to happen this season, I think, actually. And I think this character is going to come up very prominently.
So he's like the Alan Fitch for the Russian side.
I think there's a possibility.
Okay.
Only much more nefarious, because I don't think he has a connection to Red in a positive light like Fitch did.
Okay, so more like Peter then.
Yeah.
The director.
Yeah. Well, she ends up turning information that Karakurt is a turncoat for the Cabal over to Russia. Do you think that's what flagged her as a liability?
Well, I don't think she turned it over to Russia per se, as she turned it over to a member of the Cabal. Because I guess the question was the guy that she was being interviewed by that knew every single intelligence officer in the Western Hemisphere, was he a Cabal member, or in the transmission of information he was sharing back with the motherland, was the Cabal intercepting, and then the Cabal put their driver in place, and the driver was really the only Cabal member in this entire thing?
Well, because, I mean, they seem to be very focused on just framing her, right? Framing her as a terrorist. That's really what the Cabal wanted. And then now you've got them wanting to take her out. So I guess that's why I asked that question. Is it because she was willing to turn that information over that they stepped up their game and said, all right, we got to kill her now. You know, we can't just, she's escaped her own authorities. She's seeking asylum through Russia. We've got to put an end to her.
And I think that goes right into where the driver gets injected by Mr. Solomon, is that I think they're viewing her at this point because she did defect in order for her not to ruin their plans on the other side of the table in Russia. They have to take her out because now she's a loose end because they needed her to get to Red, but now they're separated. So now we have to take her out before she can get Russia, you know, doing whatever's happening in the United States with the news reporters and stuff and all that coming out.
Is anybody else, when you hear the word separated, you have that song in your head? Gotta keep them separated. Every single time. God, it's annoying. I'm sure I'm annoying somebody else by getting that stuck in their head for the rest of the day. Well, while waiting for a piece of Chewy's delicious pecan pie, Red sees a guy, and we are jumping around a little bit, and I'll explain why and shortly. But while he's waiting for this piece of delicious pecan pie, which I really want the recipe, because he mentioned it at least like 5 times throughout the episode, Red sees a guy being abusive to his woman friend and proceeds to threaten him viciously. Now, the reason I bring that up is, you know, we've seen him defend women repeatedly over the show. And I wonder, do you think this reaction, this visceral reaction, and immediately coming to this woman's defense, do you think this has something to do with his history?
It absolutely does. I mean, the big thing that you took away from that scene is the two things that have happened before. So when you look at it, he uses the words like, you don't know how to talk to a woman, which we heard when Naomi was telling Liz back in season 2, mm-hmm. you know, Red knows and understands how to talk to women. So we're getting a kind of a flashback of that conversation, that Red treats women better than anybody. And then, of course, we go to the awesome part of the I'll cut your tongue out with a butter knife, which, if you remember, Red actually followed through on that threat back in season 2 when he sent the tongue to the director.
Yeah, I got excited. I'm like, please hit her again. That sounds mean, but I really wanted his tongue cut out. So I knew he would follow through if that happened, which is funny because, I mean, when Keen's beating the snot out of him, he stops her.
I think he stops because she backed up into Chewy and hurt Chewy, and he didn't want the pecan pie recipe to die with him.
I think it was more, I'm trying to keep Keen from becoming me. That's what I got out of that.
That too.
Now, keep in mind, I always forget to preface this. If you never listen to an episode, we always break down the basic story of the episode, and then we go through character by character, which is why we're bouncing around a little bit. We don't do that scene-by-scene stuff that some podcasts do. Well, after the really cool escape, I mean, Wrestler came to her rescue, which I did not see coming. Did you notice? I mean, he didn't hesitate. Even though it's an act of war, he didn't hesitate to come to her rescue when Red says, yes, they're going to assassinate Liz.
Which I think ties into the question we've always had, is there something more between Wrestler and Liz, maybe romantically?
It's a question you've had, my friend. I haven't had that question. I already have an answer in my head.
Well, fine. If you have an answer to the question, either way, there's something clearly there between what Wrestler wants to do for Liz. Because, I mean, even then, it's like, if Wrestler can, you know, do this act of war, take him out, run and drive and everything, and then he comes up to the car and he can still see her, right? Mm-hmm. Why not run after her? So clearly there's something going on with Wrestler that he is not totally wanting to capture her. He's almost complicit again for the second time in her escape.
Well, she was really far. I mean,
she wasn't that far. She could see her. He could shoot a gun and scare her and get her to stop.
Oh, she was super far. You can't just fire a gun randomly into the street. I'm pretty sure that's against the rules.
She was only a block away.
Act of war is okay. Firing a gun randomly in the street's not so good. You don't do that. I see what you're saying. I personally have always thought that he loves her, and that's why he feels so betrayed, because of what happened. And he's never going to let anything happen to her. And once that was told to him, that her life is in danger by her going to the airport, he's like, nope, I guess I'm going to throw complete public relations to the wind and I'm going to save her.
Yeah,
she saved him. She saved him too. She saved him too.
Right. Because he comes to that decision like, oh, she's dead. Red doesn't give him that clip. He like thinks about it in his own mind,
mm-hmm.
which I think is his realization of, oh crap, we got to save her.
Well, which is funny because he had no interest in anything Red had to say until Liz's life was in danger. Like, he's just like, come down here and tell me yourself, tough guy, you know, whatever. But as soon as Liz's life was in danger, then he's to the rescue.
Now, the thing that's great about the show, though, we've always talked about, is that you could always look at a scene from two different angles. So in this case, could it be that he is all about the law and that he wants to make sure that his investigation comes to some fruition? Like, why did you kill Tom Connolly?
No.
And he doesn't want to lose the chance to basically capture her himself and bring her in and deal with her that way.
No. 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 Bad dog. There's no way. In my mind, there's no way that's the case. Because if that were the case, he wouldn't have touched that convoy because he didn't have, other than a noted fugitive who's helping her escape, he had no real evidence that this was going to happen. So he just basically took the chance of starting a war to save this woman's life when he wasn't 100% certain that that woman's life was in danger. He went on gut and heart in that moment.
I'm willing to start a war for love.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's how wars start, man. It's happened. Okay, well, Red, basically when they get to the diner, Red takes it over and turns it into the Inside Job, if you ever saw that movie with Denzel. It ends up being like that, where he takes the diner over basically to cover an elaborate escape plan for he, Liz, and Red's former attorney, Marvin Gerard. Now, Marvin Gerard was played by 80s actor Fisher Stevens. You might remember him from Short Circuit. He's also
absolutely
married to Michelle Pfeiffer for a short time, who's noted for that. But a very popular actor. Loved him in the 80s and 90s. He had a lot of great stuff. What? Tell us about the character, though. Tell us about Marvin Gerard.
Marvin is a guy who basically had everything going for him. He was a partner in a law firm. He got to marry the boss's daughter, basically. They had a great kid. And for some reason, his wife was a little bit abusive and took it out on poor Timothy. And with that, it just escalated to a point where he wanted to get custody. But because she is part of this wealthy law firm, she ended up retaining custody, beat him up some more. So he had to do what he had to do for his son. So again, we're getting a great family conversation, which I'm sure goes into the overall part of the story, that he did what he needed to do, which was kidnap Timothy. And eventually the law caught up to him. He got disbarred, got put in jail. And Timothy, because he couldn't handle his mother's abuse anymore, ended up hanging himself at the age of 15. But apparently he's really good at his job. And that's why Red wanted to make sure that he kept tabs with him so that way they could go through the fulcrum of all things to find a loophole, I guess. And that's the part where this episode just went, ooh, we got interesting here, because there's something in the fulcrum they're going to use to bring down the cabal.
Yeah. And
more than just releasing the information in general.
So, and we'll get to that information here in a second. But why do you think he's important to the future? Because it obviously Red is going to come back to him. I mean, when he's comfortably in Tahiti, Red plans on coming back to him and his fiancee, Becky, at some point. Why do you think that is?
Well, as he drove away with Becky, he's like, I want to make sure that the plan is fully flushed out. Mm-hmm. So it seems, and this is why we love story time with Red too, majority of the show is all about a war of words. So wouldn't it be great if he's putting this plan together, not so much as an action plan, but more as a legal juxtaposition of the rules so that they could formulate something to either get to whoever's in charge or turn the tables on the cabal by maybe having another country come into play.
Okay.
Or Russia coming in and actually taking care of the U.S. side of the cabal, if need be.
And this is the second episode, basically, where a blacklister is somebody that was helping Red in some way. Now, last week, it ended up being somebody who ultimately said, I'm not going to help you anymore. But he was helping him escape. This week, it's Marvin Gerard who had helped Red in the past. And this time, he actually helps him escape. So I guess my question is, some people have raised concern about the changing of the series to a degree. And I think that's just because it's jarring. Because I think for two seasons, you're used to a certain way that the show operates. And then this season is going a completely different direction. You know, it's they're on the lam. It's not going to be the blackest story of the week. So as we've become accustomed to, are you enjoying the change? Are you enjoying the more serialized nature?
Yeah, and it's not even that it was abrupt, I don't think, to me. I think if you would have gone post-Super Bowl episode with this storyline, then it would have been abrupt because it's middle of the season. But you had that entire summer off, and you knew the tables were going to be changed because of the big shocking finale at the end of season two, that you can't have it operate the exact same way. Yeah, so I really like the fact, especially if you did read the comic book over the summer, that you're getting into these people that were part of Red's network, part of Red's information. And just because, and I think we even talked about this a little bit in season two, people that are on the blacklist aren't necessarily evil or need to be taken out. They are part of a larger chess game that leads to Red's ultimate conclusion, which is the series finale.
Now, I'm starting to think that from here on out, we're going to have Red's going to be taking people out, getting to an ultimate goal. And I think each week it's going to be, that's how the blacklisters are going to be determined. Is that kind of what you're getting?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, and it was even that way in season two a little bit, right? We kind of
got the second half, yeah.
A hybrid, right? Like Ruslan Denizov, right? Didn't kill him. He wanted to make sure Ruslan was in power because he needs to come back to Ruslan at some point for whatever it's going to be, either trade or product or location, right? Because he's there, was it the Ukraine that Ruslan was in? So he's right there next to Russia. So maybe it's a strategic vantage point.
Ooh, strategic vantage point. I like that. I love what they're doing. I know there's some people that feel like they have had a hard time adjusting to the change, but I love it, man. I love when a series will take a chance and go a different direction, and I think it's paying off in spades. I loved it. I loved the multiple cliffhanger endings at the end. I mean, this for me overall, I love this episode. Not as much as last week. I like last week's. I think we're opposite on that. I like last week's more. You like this week's more, right?
I'm more of a cerebral thinker episode. So I think when you look at all of the things that are on the surface of this episode and then you take it a level deeper and how it ties back to other stuff, I think that's where, for me, this episode is better versus last week where it is the more action-filled. I think both are good in their own rights. So it just depends on what part of the story are you liking as a blacklist watcher. Are you liking the, what's Red's history? What's Red's, you know, backstory? What are the people that he, if you like that kind of stuff, then this week is better. If you're more on the, you know, action and what is Red and Lizzie going to do next, then you like the premiere a little bit better.
I like both, man. I just like last week's better. Well, here's what Gerard finds. He finds something in the fulcrum, something that Red missed. Section 39C, pages 216 and 217, lines 5 through 19. And they don't say what it says, but here's what they say while talking about it. It's all kinds of wrong, is what Gerard says. And Red says, a perilously fast run down a slippery road. What do you think this means? Just tell me. Show me the page, something.
Yeah, and this is the hard part, because is it the way that they're going to solve the problem, all kinds of wrong? Or is it what they were reading was all kinds of wrong? And then they switched the conversation to, but it could be done if you hit every green light. Really an interesting conversation, because you didn't know how much of what they were saying was about what they were reading or about what they were planning because of what they were reading.
Very, very interesting. And I really think that is a piece of information that is setting something up for the future, obviously. But I would love to speculate, but they didn't give us anything to speculate about. Did I miss something? Did you see anything else that there was to speculate? I didn't. I listened to that scene probably 5 times.
No, it's just like, hey, Red, I got something. I think I have a plan. Okay, go to your banana plantation and get that plan going.
That's right. Go to
Tahiti.
We'll
get back with you. That was it. It was like, okay, sitting and waiting.
One other connection I had that I wanted to bring up was this episode was titled Marvin Gerard, right?
Right.
And you've got wrestler Diego, who's been acting like Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive for quite a while.
Correct.
Tommy Lee Jones' character in The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals was named U.S. Deputy Marshal Gerard. Samuel Gerard, but still Gerard. Do you think that was intentional, or am I just way overthinking it?
Oh, no. Totally connecting points here. I think we have very smart writing staff with the Blacklist that they are totally pulling that stuff in to make a point. And the people like us that watch the show so delicately would pick up on that. And I think that's what our job is as the fan podcasters, right? Is to pick up on those things and share them with the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Really love that. As soon as I saw that, I just got giddy because I'm a huge fan of that movie. You are too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Just love the movie and love the original TV show too.
I mean, someone even said, I think it was on Facebook or Twitter, about, you know, the fact that they use the word Connie, and when he turns around, he looks like Sean Connery, you know? So it was like, did they actually call him Connie because he looked like Sean Connery? I don't know.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Quite possible. Before we go on to character Sheila, I hope it was Sheila, asked me, sent me a direct message wanted me to answer a question. What was the connection? Because I had said before that there was a connection between Andrew McCarthy and Jane Spader. I think it was online. I said it on Twitter or something. But she wanted me to explain what that connection was. Those guys have known each other for decades. And Andrew McCarthy is the actor Andrew McCarthy. You know, you've known him from Pretty in Pink and numerous, numerous other movies. St. Elmo's Fire.
But Anakin also from the 80s.
Yeah. But also specifically Less Than Zero. That is a movie with Jane Spader, who plays quite the bad guy. Andrew McCarthy's essentially the good guy. And you got Robert Downey Jr. in probably one of his best roles as well. So it's totally an 80s connection. 80s connection. Just it's a fun little tidbit for me, being a movie buff and seeing all those guys in the same element. I mean, I'm waiting for Robert Downey Jr. to pop up. Maybe Tony Stark can help, you know, Red out at some point. That'd be great. No? You don't like that? I think it's a brilliant idea.
Oh, I think Robert Downey Jr. absolutely should show up.
He should show up. He should be just one of the masterminds.
Yeah, just not Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. can show up.
I disagree. Tony Stark showing up in this show, I think, would be fantastic. All right, let's go to characters. We've got this is where we break down where our individual characters and their subplots are. Aram, he didn't really do a whole lot this week. He just kind of tracked down a 911 call.
That was a great, great move, because I thought at first they made it, when they shot it, they made it look like the lady behind the counter actually made the call. And then you're like, oh, crap, he called it in on himself? That's awesome.
I called that right away. I'm just letting you know. I called that right away. Wasn't fooled, guys. Wasn't fooled. Troy was. He's a simple mind. Apparently, being so cerebral, you don't think too hard.
The whole scene with Liz and the gun and hitting Chewie, and so I was like, does he know Chewie or does he know Chewie? And I was trying to like figure that part out. And if he doesn't really know Chewie, then maybe the lady behind the counter really is just a, you know, lady behind the counter versus someone that's actually part of the operation.
Well, here's the thing. When he shows up in this diner and he obviously knows Chewie, which how random would that be? He's obviously got a connection to this guy. Loves his pecan pie. And then he directs Liz there. I knew that there had to be an escape plan. He's got an out. He's always got an out. That was my theory.
It's not a nitpick, but I have to ask, does it bother you that there's always an out? Like it was so easy that there was just happened to be that window underneath the sink. And it just so happened there was an entire freezer that's an elevator. I mean, is that one
was a little it was a little bit of a reach where I'm watching going, wait, what? The elevator is in the freezer. Nobody remembers.
The elevator is a freezer. The freezer is an elevator.
That one, I gotta admit, you gotta swallow some disbelief there, because man, come on. I'm sure when the FBI, based on the limited knowledge I have of the FBI, right, I would assume that as soon as somebody takes over any building, they're gonna find the plans. And they're gonna find the blueprints and the schematics, that sort of thing. So they're gonna know, hey, guess what? They put a freezer elevator in there. Who knew? You know, or something like. It's kind of hard to put that into a building without someone else knowing about it. I don't care how connected you are, but I still liked it. It was a cool little touch that I never would have thought of. It's extremely imaginative. And my rule of thumb is, if something is outside the realm of belief, right? It just seems ridiculous, but it's extremely creative. I'll let it pass.
Yeah, because at first when he lifted up the keypad and he starts putting in the code, I was like, okay, the back door of the freezer is going to open.
That's what I thought too.
But the freezer starts moving, I was like, okay, I'm going to let that go because that's really freaking cool.
Yeah, a refrigerator. I don't think that we would ever expect that. So I just let it slide. I actually had a harder time with the Mr. Solomon killed the driver, when he went and killed the driver and he cuts the cop's throat. It's like, is there nobody else in the hallway? I mean, are there not nurses in this hospital? Are there not staff nearby? It just, that one seemed a little more. Because, I mean, the cop really had his throat cut. It's not like you could walk by and be like, oh, he's tired. I mean, there's blood just coming out of the wound. He's conked over. That one was a little bit of a stretch for me.
Well, it could be a protected wing of the hospital, too, where the nurses don't have to come down there and check every 5 seconds to, like, make sure you're bleeding or alive or dead or whatever, right? Like they do in a normal hospital where they're bothering you every freaking second of the day, you know?
Okay.
It could be.
I don't know the FBI as well as I'd like to, but I do know medical. My mom was a nurse for 30. I spent a lot of time in the hospitals. And trust me, there would have been nurses or doctors somewhere in the vicinity. I don't care how protected it was. So that one was a little bit of a stretch. But it's a well done show. I kind of let some of that stuff go. It really doesn't bother me much. Now, Dembe, he basically spent the entire episode laid on the floor getting his butt beat with pool balls and a sock, prison style. That's all we got, but we kind of get the indication of what they want Dembe for now, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he clearly says it's like, where's your boss?
Right, so but what we, do you think I, he wanted him for before, though? Because, I mean...
I really like the concept that one of the listeners had said about, you know, actually finding more about Red's network so that way they could be a step ahead of Red. Because right now, Red's always a step ahead of them, so I think it'd be better to drill him more for the information of other people in the chain of command to Red in order to find out where he might go next. So, you know, ultimately it is to get to Red, but it's to get to Red through other means rather than just following behind him playing tag.
So you think the theory is let's keep Dembe until we actually have Red in our possession?
Absolutely.
Okay. So because I kept thinking, I'm like, well, I mean, why are they so desperate to get Red at this point? I mean, he's already released the Fulcrum. What more can he have?
Yeah, and that's what I always thought, too. Once the Fulcrum was out in the wind, then they would just take Red out because they don't need him anymore. Mm-hmm. Unless he's got some other collateral or some other information that they need. And maybe with this new information about Katerina Rostova having a daughter, maybe they actually want to get to Katerina Rostova and she is still alive.
Well, you know she's still alive. Come on. And I'm sure the Cabal has watched TV, too. So they know. They know. They got this figured out. Samar. Oh, Samar, how I love thee. She basically turns into Wrestler's conscience the last couple episodes. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. In this episode, she's also the audience rule of law. I mean, she don't rush the embassy. Don't attack the car. Nag, nag, nag. Always riding them. Poor Wrestler.
Yeah, I was looking at that going two ways. One, I was like, okay, if she's being the voice of the audience, we're smart. We get it. You know, you can't attack the Russian embassy. Got it.
A lot of people don't know that, though. A lot of people don't know that.
You think? You don't think so?
No, I absolutely don't think so.
Nope. Is it just because we watch a lot of, like, 24 and a lot of these, like, international shows?
Dude, we watch these shows, like, every day. So we kind of have an advantage in that respect. Everybody that watches them religiously, yes, you know. But a lot of people, you know, they've come to this show. They like Jane Spader. They like the dynamic, that sort of thing. They might not know. And so they're just covering the base. I think you have to cover that base to explain why wouldn't he just go in and get her when she's out in the car. They're outside the embassy now. Why not go in and get her? I mean, they have to explain that to a degree.
Because I liked it as her explaining it as Wrestler's conscience. Because it's like, okay, I know that you like her. And I know that it's your partner. And I know you feel betrayed. You know, but remember, you are the law and you want to be... You know, the good FBI agent that you say you are, you know, don't step off that dark path. It's almost like Cooper talking to Liz in that regard.
She did have, and I know some people are going to say that Red's lines were the best lines of the night. I respectfully disagree. Her line where she said, as is my right to not to be nauseated, was my favorite line of the night. I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, that was so funny. She doesn't get enough credit. That was funny. And her delivery was perfect.
Yeah, she even like rolled her eyes at the same time she said
perfect. Mr. Solomon, this guy's getting the Cabal's money's worth. I mean, he killed the Russian driver. He's torturing Dembe. What do you think? I know we kind of briefly talked about it, but what do you really think his ultimate endgame is? Just kill Red?
Solomon's endgame?
Yeah, Solomon's endgame.
I don't think Solomon has an endgame. I think Solomon is just following orders.
I get that. I mean, do you think his orders stop at kill Red?
No, probably not. I'm sure it's to also take out all the reporters and contain the Fulcrum situation and make sure all the loose ends are tied up, right? Because I love the way they delivered that. It's like, you are what we call, and I immediately said, a loose end. And mm-hmm. Then he's like, a loose end.
Well,
so
we
I love the fact
that
it was the dramatic pause in there because I think that's his job. He's the fixer. He is the one that comes in and cleans up everybody's mistakes.
How'd you like, he's ripped.
You know what I love about Mr. Solomon is that there was that time and point where we were talking about, you know, could this show go on if Reddington wasn't on the screen?
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, I would just love an hour of Mr. Solomon right now.
Really?
He's so good.
Just following him around torturing random people?
Yeah.
And doing it shirtless for some reason? I guess so you don't get blood on your shirt? Is that why?
Of course. You don't want to have any splatter, which was, I have to say, the pool ball scene I loved. But mm-hmm. The sound effect that comes after it, it's like, okay, if you're going to hit him, you got to hit him like, you know, arm or chest or something where he's going to break bones because the sound effect sounded like they smushed his head.
Oh man, I winced. I watched this episode 3 times. Don't ask me why. It's a long story, but when you're live tweeting, it's really hard to pay attention. So you kind of got to watch it again. But when he hits him with the pool balls, and I don't know where he hit him. I assume the head is what it looks like. But I wince every single time. Just, you know, it's one of those moments.
Yeah, we had another podcast we did for Under the Dome, and the first season they had the same thing where it was a baseball bat, and they actually did smash her head in. So it's like I had that sound effect ingrained in my brain because you just don't expect to see that on network television.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that sound came again, it was like, why would you hit him in the head? So I'm wondering if he actually did hit him in the head or if he was meant to hitting him somewhere else because they actually wanted to be conscious to spill the information.
I'm still shaking, man. They really creeped me out.
Great scene, though.
Yeah, it was a great scene. Great scene. Cooper, now here's something that really took me by surprise. I'll be perfectly honest. He gets offered a pass. I mean, he gets a hall pass from the president, basically. Says, because it went through the White House is why I say from the president. I know he didn't put it together. Full pension, benefits, and all he has to do is walk away. Because even if he clears himself from everything, he's still going to be stuck at a desk for life. So why doesn't he want to take it?
Because he is the honorable man that we always thought he was. And because of that, he wants to make sure he can help in any way he can. So what better way to help than to be on the inside somehow, in this case with the CGIS?
Okay, devil's advocate. You can help. I guess you can't help as much, but he's not going to have access to all the stuff he had access to before. So why not see if he can help on the inside and also have his good name intact? I mean, that seems like a huge gamble, even for somebody like Cooper.
What? See, here's the thing, though. He could still have the access, because if you think about it, CJIS is the Criminal Justice Information Services Division, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically an analyst. Is he an analyst or is he an IT guy? Either way, he should have some mad skills in order to crack systems and get around the firewalls if he needed to in order to get the information he's looking for.
Oh, they would lock him out until it was settled. I promise that. So I'm trying to figure out what would you do? My question was, what would you do? Would you take the out or would you stay in like he's doing?
I would stay in.
Really?
I like working.
I like working. I'd take the out. Full pension and benefits. Get to walk away. I can help on my own as a citizen, not restricted by the laws of the land. Yeah, I would take the out.
But you have to remember, you have to look at Cooper's character, and Cooper always seemed like a father figure to Liz. So until Liz's name is cleared, or at least he removes himself from his ties to the situation, right, his complicity in it, then he wants to make sure that he can clear his name the way he wants to clear his name, right? He doesn't want a favor to clear his name.
Yeah, well, he's wrong. Take the out, man. If you're listening, take the out. Help on the outside. That's how you do it. That's the best way to do it.
This goes into what we were talking about how would he be used this season, and now that if he's in the FBI still, but not in the chair, that lets Wrestler still be in the chair, but it allows him to maybe be like the coach from the sidelines for Wrestler.
Mm-hmm. I see what they can do with it. I wouldn't take it. I would take it. I would take the deal. Okay, well, now we're at our 3 favorite characters, because Wrestler has just jumped. I mean, for a lot of people, he has just leapfrogged into a favorite character. A lot of people have complained about him the last couple seasons about how he was underutilized. We have too. You know, we're on record as last season not loving some of his arcs, especially the drug addiction arc.
Well, be clear, though. It's not that they don't like Wrestler as the character. They all loved Wrestler.
Yeah, it was the direction.
They were upset about how he was being used.
Yeah.
Now they're excited about how he's being used.
Calm down, all right? Jeez, get all defensive.
I'm the lawyer here today.
I guess. Well, he has become, or they are using him. Fine. Are you happy? Are you good? They're utilizing him the way that I think is best served. He has become a great character in the show of this season, and several of his moves have just showcased how good Diego is at playing him and playing the different opportunities that have been afforded to him. He plays chicken with her convoy. He knows, quote-unquote, knows Keen, and he basically committed an act of war to save Keen. So back to my question, tell me again, he doesn't love her.
Oh, he has to. And the only out from that is specifically because it was the partner relationship, not necessarily the love relationship. Because when your partner betrays you, especially if you're in a cop or an FBI or whatever, that is like a sacred partnership. And if that partnership is invalidated, you want to make sure you solve why it was invalidated Was it something I did? Am I a bad cop? Am I a bad agent or whatever? So if it's not love, it's because of that, which is almost as strong as love when you talk about law enforcement.
I think it's definitely love. Definitely. Especially with how it ended. And, you know, that's going to come back into play because, you know, Mr. Boater is back. There's definitely going to be a love triangle continuing in the series. And I, for one, I like that because I have said many times, I prefer Wrestler. If she's going to be in love with somebody, kick Tom to the curb, throw him in the marina, and bring Wrestler to the front. He's good. He's honorable. He'll do what it takes to do the right thing. That's a guy I want. I really like where they're taking Wrestler. I really love that they are giving him an arc that he can play. And I think he's doing a damn good Tommy Lee Jones impression.
I do, too. I think it's absolutely where he needed to be. He needed to be. And I love, too, what they did here. It's like there's so much throwback in this episode. And this fact that he specifically is like, I spent all this time hunting Reddington and no one's been able to ID him. It reminds you that he is the perfect man to be in charge of the task force because hunting Reddington is Wrestler's job. It's like his whole life. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're back at that, we can actually see what he was like previously during that 1994 to 2012, 2015 time frame, you know, as an agent. And maybe some of that is actually coming in as part of his character development this season is the what mistakes did I make the first time? Therefore, how do I correct and adjust for those mistakes now?
What kind of use are they going to have for him now? Because with Liz out of the country and Red out of the country, you know, the jurisdiction stops at that water. So, you know, they're not the CIA, they're the FBI. So what happens? What do you think?
I think he still tries to solve the Kara Kurtz side. So you have like Cooper was looking up Kara Kurtz's name. Mm-hmm. You have Marvin Gerard, who's now fled, you know, the justice system, basically. So he's trying to figure out the Marvin Gerard angle. And I think as they uncover other pieces of the puzzle for the stuff that is stateside that is in their jurisdiction, it uncovers that puzzle faster.
Man, this is getting really interesting. I really like where they're going, especially getting those guys out of the country, which we're going to talk about in a second. I'm excited.
And don't forget, you know, there was this CIA that was attacked. So now you could bring in a completely other division into the show. And the CIA would be involved because their job is the outside of the country stuff.
And I guess Wrestler could be involved in that respect because they can use him. They can bring him on board as some kind of confidant, you know, or agent on the ground because he's familiar with the case. He's familiar with Keene, da da da. I could see that maybe as an opening.
Depending on how far they're even gone from the U.S. soil. They could just be out for a one-day cruise for the ship to turn around
really?
And report itself.
Really, Troy? I mean, there was open water. I'm pretty sure they're on an ocean somewhere. They're not just cruising around looking for islands.
Okay, maybe it's a three-day cruise.
Yeah, 3-day cruise. All right, now our two main characters. Liz busted out her Russian accent when she dropped the names. Did you hear that?
Absolutely.
But Russia kind of confirmed that she is not a deep cover Russian spy. Like some people have theorized that maybe she actually ultimately is a deep cover Russian spy. Didn't they?
It depends on how you look at it. If you take it at face value, then absolutely. She's not. You are a U.S. citizen. don't play me. If you look at it from a potential blacklist angle where everything could be a lie, which was set up right away in the very first episode, then this guy worked for the cabal and he doesn't really know.
I see it. I mean, he point blank says, I would know. I'm the guy. I would know if you were a deep cover spy. And she doesn't argue the case. So I would think... And in fact, in that point, she gives up information on Kirikir because she realizes that bluff's not working. Red has said to Wrestler that he, you know that she's not a spy. All this stuff, I think this pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, it clears her, doesn't it? You don't think so? You don't think there's a possibility that she's 100% cleared at this point?
I believe Red saying that she's not a spy to Donald clears it more than I believe this Russian guy, random dude sitting in the desk with him saying that you're not a spy because that could be anybody. I mean, especially if he's a cabal member. Then you look at Mr. Solomon and it's that whole cat and mouse game. It's like, well, did you put in the stuff in the daughter's digestive tract or did you not put it in? So you get to that point with the cabal. It's like you don't know anything that they're saying is true because in this case, Liz is already in an emotional heightened state. So she may just give out information without thinking because she's not in that frame of mind to be thinking strategically.
I'll be honest, that moment when she dropped the Russian accent, and not really, I mean, she doesn't say any Russian words, but she has, when she says a Russian name, she says it with a Russian accent. And she did it so well that in that moment, I'm like, maybe she is a Russian spy. Holy snap. I honestly thought maybe there's a chance. Which would be a really cool twist, I think. So maybe they're keeping that option open. I don't know. See how it works out. For the first time, we see Keane as a true villain. I mean, a true, and I know she shot Connolly, but there was reasoning behind it. Here, she just loses her calm and beats a smack out of this guy. And also ends up hitting poor Chewie, who's just wanting to make the best pecan pie we could ever hope for. How do you feel seeing that she reacted so violently? She had a really hard understanding of what that means. You know, people are looking at her, they're fearing her, they're terrified of her, and she seems to really be concerned with it. But she also didn't seem to shy away from it to a degree. Do you see shades of red?
Oh, I absolutely see shades of red, but I think it's more, you have to, again, go back to the things that we've already been told and already set up. So you go back to Linus Creel and the warrior gene concept, you know, and she had herself tested, and more than likely she does have the warrior gene. What I really loved about this sequence is that you're seeing that either she's programmed or conditioned, or there's something more with the memory alteration concept, you know, that Red supposedly had her memories blocked, but maybe there was more to that. Situation. Like you said, you know, she had that Russian accent so perfectly, so she had to have been in Russia long enough or lived with Russian parents long enough to develop that accent rather than coming right to the States at age 4 right after the fire. So there has to be something to that, that maybe that part of it's blocked out even. And it's almost like something was unlocked in that moment. Now, visually, of course, in the scene, it's because she's like, oh, crap, you know, people look at me like I'm red, and she has to deal with that. And we talk about that at the end of the episode. But it was the fact that she turned the gun and pointed it at Red and held it there. And in that scene, you're just sitting there going, okay, has she done this before? Is the person she shot Red in the fire not her dad? Mm. Or is this a scene that we're supposed to be, ooh, this is a turning point in Red's development, because is this the last time Red and Katarina were face-to-face and Katarina had a gun to Red? So, I mean, there's a lot happening in that scene that you could take any one of the potential storylines that we're kind of theorizing with and totally make it work.
Well, there's a lot in this entire episode that you could take about 10 different ways.
A lot, too.
A lot. One question I had, and this is a real devil's advocate question, because I've seen this online. I've personally had this opinion to a degree. Do you think because the last couple episodes, Liz has been very reliant on Red. And she also seems to be very forgiving about things in the past, because he has done some things that if I were her, I'd probably want to beat the smack out of him. You know, I mean, he has done some things to her, erasing her memory and a lot of other things that he could have just told her and would have made her life so much easier. But he didn't. He played that long con and honestly caused her more pain. Do you think she's forgiving him too easily? Like, she is just warming up to him too easily to a degree, and it's not being true to the character? Or do you think it's earned at this point?
I think that he's done enough bad things, but at the same time done enough good things, that I think she's aware that he always has her best interest in mind, especially at the end of season 2 when she remembers killing her father, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of confirms that, because Red doesn't lie to Liz, if we still buy that rule. That I think at that point, their relationship changes in an instant in that moment, right? Because that's such a vulnerable memory, that once that happens, and now this is the only person I can rely on, I immediately can take that leap and trust him implicitly, at least until something else comes along that tells me otherwise.
Okay, because I think it's a legitimate concern that some people have raised. And I've had that issue too, where I have debated it. I've honestly debated it. I've ended up where you are. But I have these last couple episodes thought, man, she's really too comfortable almost, where she's willing to forgive things. And then you reflect back to the season finale of last year, and it kind of makes sense. But there's also a little bit of, man, it's almost too easy. You know what I mean? To a degree.
And I love, too, how she was holding the gun pointed at Red, and she had that quivering hand like she almost had when she was facing off against Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
And then she needed the second hand to steady herself, you know, and really lock it in and point it down. I think that was the same thing here. You know, she's like, what am I doing? Like, it's almost like something in her brain is ticking or setting off or something. And she's like, needs to be snapped out of it in order to come back to the Liz that we know.
I don't think she's coming back to the Liz that we know. I think we're going to instead see her progress to be more like Red, where she's slowly realizing the power that comes with that fear. You know, that she can get some things done that she didn't think she could. I think we're going to see her progress into more of a Red-like character throughout the season.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I see. Speaking of Red, I'm going to mention a couple of his lines. Screw the bear and the bear screws back. No batteries included. Ouch, by the way. Water wiggle. Bedside table behind the Benoit balls. And I'll cut your filthy tongue out with that butter knife. This was some of the best Red dialogue we've had in a long time.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you just ruined the entire Red's rhetoric section because I used all those.
Oh, I don't care. I'm just getting ahead of the game, man. Getting ahead of the game. Do you think this is an intentional, like, let's just chew some scenery? Let Spader chew some scenery?
I think that it's been a long time since we've had these, like, really good Red remarks, especially with the second half of season two where Red was in the episode, but it wasn't the same kind of Red we knew from season one where he'd have these great stories. So I think this was a nice throwback for the audience to say, hey, look, the Red we know is still here, and here's a little bit of taste of what you're going to get this season, and all of his things are now even a little darker because we're in a darker situation for the two of them.
People always quote the lines to me, right? They always read the lines, and I think we got a lot of play on Twitter because of one of the tweets I sent out about, I'll cut your filthy tongue out, he got spadered. That guy got spadered. But honestly, my favorite Red moment of the episode is when, right after the Benoit balls line, when the reporter is leaving Connie's room, and she's like, you. And he goes, me? It's just it's just the way Spader played it. I love that. I love those little subtle reactions that he gives for no reason. It's not dialogue. It's 100% Spader. And that delivery, just beautiful to me. I like that more than I love the scenery chewing. Just because you never, that's not in the dialogue. That's not great writing. That's Spader. And I love those moments.
Absolutely.
Yeah, love those moments. All right, shippers. We've talked about this before, about how some people are connecting Liz and Red in a romantic way. And it's called shipping. For people that aren't aware of this term, shipping is basically where TV fans like us, anybody listening to this podcast and anybody talking on this podcast are obviously diehard fans of the show, or you wouldn't be listening and or talking on it. Those fans that want two characters to get together, they call them shippers, right?
Right. Right.
Okay. Well, people have been shipping Liz and Red for a long time. So how about this for a frickin' literal translation of shipping? Red and Liz end up drinking wine in a shipping container on a ship while Red talks about how all he ever wanted was to be captain of, you guessed it, a ship. Do you think this was completely intentionally on the nose?
From a shipper's perspective, no. I go back to Tom and Cooper's conversation that the best ships are friendships.
No. Not from the. The writers completely did that 100% on the nose.
There was a couple of things actually tonight that I thought was interesting, and I know I'm saying that they're writing for me, but I thought it was interesting that they used my hometown of Milwaukee in this episode. And they used my daughter's name in this episode. It was kind of like, oh, that's weird.
I don't think they did it intentionally, man.
No, they did not. But I just thought it was weird because it's like, my point is that when you have a frame of reference, like my hometown or my daughter's name, that you see those things and you're like, oh, that's kind of cute, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a frame of reference for the shippers, then clearly you're going to be like, oh, they're totally playing to us, the shippers, with the scene. And then those of us that aren't shippers are like saying, oh my gosh, that's funny because they're totally like playing off on the shippers.
Are playing that. That was totally intentional. If it's not, I would be shocked if they weren't so like, funny. Let's just feed these. They call them shippers. Let's give them ships. And everything in that scene is all about ships. And then they have their Titanic moment where they're on the end going, you know, where do we go from here? Whatever. But all that I thought that was intentional. Maybe they'll correct me and tell me, no, that was just a coincidence and you're just reading too much into it. But it was super literal.
Oh, yeah. And the best part of the show is that they're playing Our House in the background. And it's like, okay, well, is it Our House from a marriage perspective? Is it Our House from a father-daughter perspective? Is it Our House from a mother-daughter perspective? I mean, come on. This was like the best scene you could have ever written because everybody's theory was in play.
Yeah.
And everybody can be correct and everybody can be so wrong.
I thought it was great. Well done. And the code on the container was, I believe, 193. I don't know if that matters.
That's what I saw.
Yeah. Is that a factor? Or is that just looking too hard?
I'm sure whoever is in charge of the shipping container company is the blacklister that's numbered 193.
Good point. All right. Well, in terms of Red, the final line that he gives is honestly one that I think has been dissected more than anything I've seen on the show, because people are just eating it up left and right. The line is, "When I look at you, I see my way home." That can mean God knows how many things, and we could probably spend hours on it. So what do you think it means, Troy? Legitimately think it means, not some stupid theory.
I think that it has something to do with Red's family, in the sense of he needs to be able to come back to the United States, come back to the things he wanted, his passions, his love, you know, being a captain of a ship, that kind of thing. So I think it's a figurative home, not a physical, like, play house, mommy, daddy kind of thing. It's literally, I want to come home to the person, you know, kind of like when he was talking about, again, I go back to the Mexican fish, because I think that's a really great one about, you know, being in the cave and will he ever see the light again? When he looks at Liz, it's him seeing the light and his ability to become the person that he used to be and get out of all of this craziness.
Okay, my theory is that it refers to, because
which isn't really my theory, but I had to come up with a different one because you wouldn't let me say my actual one.
Because your actual one is dumb. Everybody can listen to any other episode. You can hear it. We don't need to hear that thing again. All right. my theory is that it's referring to, because I believe that he is her uncle, not dad, uncle. And for whatever reason, is directly related to why her family are dead, why her family, all of her family are dead or presumed dead. And this is his way of reconnecting with the only family he has left, who is Liz, which is why he values her so much. And so he sees her as a way to come back to the life that he had to give up because he got everybody killed, essentially. That's
right.
That's what I look at it. That's how I see it. And that's why the profiling question is so great, because if you want to hear what you guys think, I mean, what do you think that line means? And that's what I look forward to. I look forward to hearing what you guys think that really means for him. Because it's all going to be based on whatever your theory is. You know, whatever yep. your personal theory is, what that's going to matter. All right, and lastly, as we roll out, as we get ready to close this episode up, let me try to get some enthusiasm. Tom is back.
I love it, because I seriously thought Tom was going to hook up with Red and Liz on the run. And the fact that he comes back and works with the mortal enemy that literally punched him in the face next to the car because of everything that's happened between the three of them and their love triangle or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. The fact that Tom and Diego have to work together, Tom and Wrestler, I think that was a brilliant move because nobody saw that coming.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think they saw Tom coming back this early either. I sure didn't. Mm-mm. I had an inkling that it was going to come. But the thing that I really love about it is the fact that Tom and Liz still really love each other because they have matching hoodies.
That's what I was going to say. You stole my joke, you idiot.
Sorry.
You suck.
That's the first thing I said when he came in. I was like, oh, look, they have matching hoodies.
I think it's the exact same one, actually. It's almost like she threw it at him when she got on the dock. Like, he was pulling into the marina just as the shipping container was pulling out. And she's like, I'm not going to need it. Here you go.
Yeah.
That was great. That, and I got a little Eminem
gray sweater.
I got a little Eminem vibe too, a little 8 Mile from yep. Tom. So that was good. He's only got one shot, you know. What do you think is going to happen with these two? I mean, I was really shocked he's going to go to Wrestler, because I mean, Wrestler is liable to just to lock him up right there,
potentially. But I think we set up enough in the episode that with that whole willing to go to war against Russia single handedly. By the way, you know, he's standing there, you know, toe to toe, gun versus car. Who's going to win? The fact that he's willing to see and, you know, beyond any shadow of a doubt, you know, believe up until he can. And the fact that Tom is like, I'm here talking to you because I need to fill you in on some pieces, I think allows him to maybe be more open to hearing Tom out, at least before the guns start firing and bottles start flying and fisticuffs start happening.
And I gotta say, because I have... last season, if you're a repeat listener, you know that I've never been a fan. I haven't been a fan of Tom for a while. And now
you haven't been a fan of Tom and Liz's relationship. Tom, but you've been a fan of Tom.
Yeah, I like Tom. I like Ryan's performance. It hasn't been an issue with that. It was the Tom and Liz relationship. The fact that he's coming back concerned me because I knew he was going to come back. I'm like, oh, we're going to get another romantic thing. But the fact that he's coming back and helping Wrestler, that makes me interested. Now I really am interested and engaged in what is going to happen, you know, where it's going to go. If it was just another romantic issue, or are they or aren't they going to get back, I just don't care about that stuff. This is much more interesting to me personally.
And then, of course, if you listen to that Daniel Knopf interview about how he talked about, you know, this being kind of the Blue Fairy to Tom's Pinocchio, that the question is this Tom Keene that's coming to talk to Wrestler, or is this Jacob Phelps that's coming to talk to Wrestler? Which persona is involved in this now, and what persona is he going to use going forward in his mind, right?
I don't want to break your heart, but Tom Keene isn't real.
I know he's not real.
I mean, it's not real. I mean, Jacob Phelps is real. He's a real boy.
So we've been told.
Yeah, so we've been told. Till he becomes somebody else. Till he becomes Wrestler. He gets some facial reconstruction, takes Wrestler out, takes his place. Bam. Connection.
A full DNA replacement, right? We've seen that happen before on the Blacklist. Yeah, it could be.
It can happen. It can. That would be a fantastic twist. I would like that. Anything else you want to cover, man? That's a lot in one episode. And that one line had people so wound up. When I look at you, I see my way home. Aww. Or is it aw? Or is it actually a scary line? You don't know. Can go either way.
And the best part of that, too, is the fact that when I look at you, and then there's a pause, and then there's like all this extra conversation that has to happen before the punchline gets delivered on that.
Yeah, wind machine and everything. You know, all that stuff has to happen before you get the delivery. Yeah. Oh, it's good. Good episode, man. Really good episode. Great follow-up to that season premiere. I didn't think they were going to be able to hold steady with the excitement and engagement that came from the premiere, and they done it.
Did you enjoy this more because you kind of had expectations from the Daniel Knopf interview? I heard a lot of people on Twitter say, hey, that interview really made me appreciate this episode even more. So did it hype it up more for you, or was it just, you know, what you expected?
No, it's 100% because of the episode itself. 100%. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Daniel Knopf, when he explained the relationship between Liz and Tom, he kind of almost brought me back to it, but not quite. That's about the only thing that really I moved on. The rest of it, I just really enjoyed the show, and the writing has continued for me. And I really love that they have gone to a more serialized nature as opposed to the more procedural of season one, kind of procedural of season two. You know, it was like a nice mix in the second season. Now it's like a fully serialized show, and I prefer serialized television. I think most of us do.
Now, what I really loved about this episode, knowing that Daniel was going to be part of it, was to find out when he mentioned, like, this was really a team effort. This was actually not one, but four people's story at the end of the day. I mean, we mentioned that the teleplay at the top, right? The teleplay was written by the Brandons and Daniel. But really, the story, the concept of this episode was actually J.R. Orsi's, because he actually wrote the story. And you know, J.R. Orsi's been around a while. So, I mean, the fact that you get, you know, Orsi's kind of vision and then, you know, the Brandons and Daniel make it play for television, I mean, that's huge. I mean, there's a lot of stuff of Orsi's that you can see fingerprinted in here, too.
That is huge. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great episode. I can't wait to see where we go. Where are we going to go next? What's going to happen?
What do you think? Get some compadres and go on offense.
If that was in the trailer, I'm going to punch you in the face. That's what I'm going to do. I swear I will.
You will never know because you don't watch the trailers.
You're just trying to get to me now. I feel it. All right, guys. Well, remember, be sure to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist sites, theblacklistnbc.com. That's theblacklistnbc.com, as well as see the weekly post for clearing the red tape.
And this week, we need a super huge favor from all of you, whether it's the first time or the 32nd time, because this is our 32nd episode, that you've listened to our show. We need you to head on over to iTunes, search for The Blacklist Exposed, and drop us a rating and a review. Tell us how you love Aaron messing up all the characters' names, or how insane you think I am with the mother theory. Or just say, hey, so that we know you're out there. In fact, if you like listening on your iOS device's podcast app, you can actually pause right now and leave that review because, you know what? We'll sit here and we'll wait.
Is it really our 32nd episode?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Are you going to start paying me yet? Am I still doing this for peanuts?
Peanut M&Ms.
Oh, they are delicious. All right. Well, speaking of delicious flavor, let's see what stories Red has to tell us with this week's Red's Rhetoric.
Now, this has got to be our first time in history, because if you can believe it, last week, Red Peace and Red Word tied. Even 50-50.
Wow. Nice.
So I think what that really says is that it doesn't matter. It was a long freaking summer and that everybody absolutely loved Red story time. So they just like anything he has to say.
That's fair. That's
so fair. With that, this week, we actually have three options for you to vote on. The third was just because it was such a cool line. But the first one comes right at the beginning of the episode when Red and Connie are having a conversation.
Oh, Connie, what a delightful nod to tradition. I can't tell you how nostalgic it is to see a Russian bureaucrat demonstrating such a time-honored absence of work ethic.
Connie, someone here.
Oh, darling, keep the show running. I'll be right in. About us a toy.
She's much prettier than she looks sitting behind the news anchor desk.
Get out.
Plus, she's married to a ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Only fair, I suppose, given the Black Book military aid he's allocated to Crimea. Reciprocity's a bitch, right, Connie? Screw the bear screws back. Batteries not included. By all means, do call in the troops. What with your government's implication in the Iria bombing and assassinations of a sitting senator and the Attorney General of the United States, how much harm could a weekly game of water wiggle between their ambassador and a senator's wife cause? Barely a blip in the news cycle. Though I doubt the Kremlin will be nearly as jejune as I am.
Not many times you can use the word jejune when you're talking with Red Reddington.
True story.
Such good stuff in there, especially the fact that he's funneling information or funds to Crimea. So keep that in mind. There's so much extra in these pieces of Red's information that you have to keep in mind because it was definitely fun. And then, of course, when he said the toy, I thought for a minute, he's like, I brought Reddington. I didn't think he was talking about the Bedouin balls on the table.
So good.
That's going to be hashtag Red Wiggle. Red Wiggle for this week. The second one is going to come obviously at the end of the episode when Red and Liz are in their quote unquote shipping container floating on the sea.
From as early as I can remember, I dreamed of someday being captain of a ship. To be out there on the ocean in the middle of the night, navigating by the stars. I always thought it would be the greatest life on Earth. The people you're talking about, the ones who think they know you, they really don't know anything about you at all. I've never told anyone that before. About a life at sea.
Why didn't you do it? You went into naval intelligence instead.
It was a Cold War. There were spies to run.
The Cabal, they blamed you for something you hadn't done.
Sailors have been navigating by the stars for thousands of years. Odysseus spent a decade at war. But his biggest battle was finding his way home.
I think you would have made a terrific captain.
I don't know. You can't do every silly thing you want to in life. You have to make your choices. You have to try to be happy with them. I think we've done pretty well. I'm not saying it's easy to ignore the way people look at you. But I hope you can find some solace in the fact that when I look at you, I see my way home.
And of course, I had to cut it out there because we can't play the actual song on the podcast, but mm-hmm. That is hashtag Red Home. So much subcontext in that conversation. So much.
That's so good. You know what? If people love the clamor, like Troy likes to tout every single week, I would love to hear a clamor with that line and Celine Dion song because I kept thinking Titanic when they came out of that shipping container. Sorry. I just had to say that.
My heart will go on.
Mm-hmm.
And our bonus Red clip this week is, of course, mano e mano in a diner with a potential butter knife.
You deaf old man, I told you to mind your own business. Turn around, bitch.
Clean. Oh, here we go.
Charlie.
The hell? You looking to get yourself killed?
You haven't the slightest clue how to speak to a woman, have you? Now, my friend there and I are having a very important discussion, so you just sit tight, enjoy your muffin, and if I hear you say anything other than please or thank you to Carly, I'm going to drag you into the men's room and wash your mouth out with soap. And if that doesn't work, I'll cut your filthy tongue out with that butter knife.
Just a little fun extra there for you. So the third one is not a voting option for this week. So hashtag Red Wiggle and hashtag Red Home are your two choices this week. Again, you can send us a tweet with your vote. You can also do it on Facebook in our Blacklist Exposed Facebook group. Or if you want to, push the thumbs up on Clamor once we have those up early next week.
Now let's dig a little deeper with our special agent intel. Terry said, proud wrestler last night. He knocked it out of the park. Finally! Yeah, I would agree with you.
Which is a complete opposite of versus being knocked around.
Poor guy. Sophie said, was it just me or did Connie look exactly like a young Sean Connery as James Bond when he first turned around upon Red saying Connie? Maybe that's why he's called Connie. Did you steal Sophie's theory?
No, I responded to Sophie on Facebook and I was like, Sophie, you're not alone.
Okay.
I thought exactly the same thing.
If you stole it, you know, there's got to be some kind of law that Sophie can take action.
I brought it up a little earlier in the show, yes, but no, Sophie has full credit.
Okay. All right. Well, Marvin Gerard, you might want to reach out to him, Sophie, and take some action.
We also got a voicemail in from our boy Rory.
Hey, Troy. Hey, Aaron. It's your boy Rory calling in from Jersey. Wanted to talk about tonight's episode, Marvin Gerard. What an awesome episode. I thought it was great that they touched on the embassy thing. I thought they wrapped it up a little quick, but I understood when I saw the rest of the episode why. Thought it was great. Red, his normal badass self. We get Tom at the end. Phenomenal, everything in between. But to me, the most important things were two scenes. One, when Gerard first walks into the diner and he meets Lizzie, he says, oh, this is the one you threw everything away for, you gave up your freedom for. I think that's important. And then at the end, when he's talking to her and they're in the box, the shipping container, and they look up at the stars and she's his way home. There's something. There's more. There's so much more now coming to light. I'm starting to lean again towards the father thing. But I look forward to listening to the podcast.
Yeah, still not on board the father thing. They've said that he's not several times. So to me, that's good enough for me. I'm not going back to that theory until I see something where he's like, oh, we did a DNA test. Guess what? I'm your daddy.
Well, Doc H wrote in and said, Shazam, what a great episode. I think it might be my favorite of all three seasons. It had everything: tight, compact storytelling, predictable at first, almost formula, then bam. The unforeseeable twists and turns at the very end. Very rewarding appointment television. Not one bit of criticism from me, which is rare indeed. Yes, and I can vote for that for Doc. Doc always finds something, but that's because he's a smart television watcher like the rest of us. I could comment on all the characters positively. Poor Dembe. But I think I will stick to Wrestler. He has never been a favorite of mine. Somehow he got under my skin in a good way this episode. He was like the Wizard of Oz, roles wrapped into one, the Cowardly Lion, Tin Man, and Scarecrow, meaning he started to get some courage, some confidence, and some savvy, all in one fell swoop. Good for him and us. Also, thanks for the Daniel Knopf interview. It made me appreciate the show more, and this episode in particular. Next interview, por favor, maybe J.R. Orsi? This ep was actually his story, after all, via V Teleplay, the script from the Brandons and Daniel. Cheers, Doc H.
Great email, Doc. I totally agree that Wrestler... Well, I already said that. So we're in agreement. We should go out and get drinks.
Absolutely. It's a party.
It's a party. Woohoo! Robin said, Red is the only one who sounds threatening while telling you he'll cut out your tongue with a butter knife. He's the best. And Uninvisible said, Lizington in a shipping container on a ship. I was pleasantly shocked by the romantic feel of that moment. Yeah, and I will say, Uninvisible, that moment was beautifully played, scripted and played, because it did come across both as familiar, as I contest, and romantic, as others contest. So it can really be taken either way, because Liz kind of looks up to him where it could be romantic or it could be, you know, a father, uncle figure. And he looks to her the same way. You could be a romantic figure or a daughter, niece figure. So I really, really love how they played that, because they kept, like Troy said earlier, kept everything in play.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Way to torture us some more. We really appreciate that. I think it's going to conclude it, Troy. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, this puppy up. Really, really good. Really good. I'm so excited for this season. It's so good right now.
It is so good. How good?
So good.
Well, that's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter this season at TheBlacklistGSM. We live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we will use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist. We also have a Facebook group to search for The Blacklist Exposed and join us for the fun.
Intel from you is what we want, and we have a few ways you can submit intel right here into the agency. You can interact with us on Tumblr, Instagram, Clamor, or as always, visit TheBlacklistExposed.com. Give us a call, use your smartphone to send us a message with our send voicemail button.
You can also subscribe to the podcast in iTunes and listen from the website. But if you are really on the go, make sure you download our app on iOS and give us a review, and Android powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for Marvin Gerard by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening, but don't forget to answer our profiling question. What does the line, "When I look at you, I see my way home," mean?
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production, copyright 2015. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.